Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for April 4, 2023. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And I would like to ask Vice President Gutzeit if she would kindly lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
We begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, thank you, Vice President Gutzeit. We can move on with our announcements for tonight. Before I do that, I'd like to remind the board that there will be, and the members of the public and staff, there will be an Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority meeting that follows this meeting. Those on the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority are the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority Board President Gutzeit, Vice President Armitage, Directors Cooper and Ozahowski, and myself. Our announcements for tonight's meeting are as follows. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public in attendance tonight, so I'd like to remind those in attendance, there are public comment cards in the hallway. Please fill those out to facilitate public comments. The procedures for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. All directors are present for tonight's meeting, except for Director Colley and Director Bronstein. We will now continue with the agenda and move on to item 3, public comment. I do not have any public comment cards. Do we have any members of the public online who wish to make public comment under item 3? This is the item where members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items that are listed in the agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Are there any public comments?
There is not.
There is not. Thank you very much. We can move on to item 4, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, or modifications to the agenda from the board members? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved, and we can move on to the consent calendar. There are 6 items on the consent calendar. There were revised minutes for the March 21, 2023 board meeting that were sent out last week and posted to the SCV Water website, as well as placed at each of our spots here on the board dais. And the only change to the minutes were the links to the approved resolutions, which were updated. Are there any public comment on the consent calendar?
There is not.
I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. Motion to approve by Director Cooper. Do we have a second? Vice President Ozahowski seconded the motion. Is there any discussion, board? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I As I call your name, please state how you vote.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. The consent calendar is approved.
Thank you, Board. We can move on to item 6, action items for approval. Unless the general manager has any opening remarks, we can move on to item 6.1. Mr. Stone, you have anything you'd like to start? Very good. Go. Item 6.1 is approve adopting a resolution authorizing number one, issuance of one or more series of revenue bonds by Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority, and two, the execution of certain documents, and three, certain other actions presented by Rochelle Patterson tonight.
Yes, sorry, I am remote tonight.
She's going to be remote.
Go ahead, Rochelle.
Yes.
Hi. Yes. So good evening, Board of Directors. This item is to approve the resolution for the legal documents for the 2023 A bond issuance of $75 million. We have a short presentation. We do have the team from our bond counsel, Doug Brown and John Guz, and also the team from Field and Rollup on the line, Robert Poor and Laura Carpenter. And I'll go ahead and pass it over to Doug Brown to go over the presentation to describe those legal documents. Is Doug on?
Doug.
Or John?
No, yeah, I'm on. For some reason, it was muting me, but I believe I'm unmuted now. Is that right?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Thank you very much. Directors, appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. This potential financing has been to you previously, and you directed staff and consultants to bring back legal documents to you for your review and approval. What you have before you tonight as the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency is a resolution, which if you approve it, will authorize your board president and staff to enter into certain agreements that will be required to consummate the transaction. Those agreements include an installment purchase agreement, which is akin to a loan agreement. In that installment purchase agreement, there are financial covenants that the agency is entering into, but these financial covenants are no different than financial covenants that you've entered into previously. So there's no expectation that you will need to agree to more burdensome financial covenants than in the past. The second document you're being asked to approve is a continuing disclosure certificate. The agency has entered into these previously. They're required by the federal securities laws, and it obligates the district annually to provide certain information to the market, which is posted electronically so that the market generally can see your updated information. Again, this continuing disclosure certificate has the same requirements as your prior continuing disclosure certificate, so you're not taking on any additional obligations. And then finally, you're approving the form of a purchase contract. This is the agreement between yourselves and the investment bank who will be buying the securities from you, which in this case is Bank of America. This document is, think of it as a little bit like when you enter into a purchase contract on a home. When these bonds are priced, there's an agreed to price and amount. This purchase contract will be signed and that locks in the interest rate for you. And this document governs the 2 or 3 week period between when you lock in that interest rate and when you close, just like closing out a house. So this document covers that time period during which the lawyers all run around and finalize all these documents. So you're being asked to approve these documents in substantial form. In addition, the government code was amended a couple of years ago, and you're required as the board to assure that good faith estimates of the cost of the financing are available to the public. So there's a finding in this resolution that those that good faith cost estimate is included in the staff report and available to the general public. So if you approve the resolution tonight, you're authorizing your board president and your staff to undertake all of those activities. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, for your presentation. Do we have any public comment, April?
We do not.
All right, we can open it to questions and discussion from the board. I think it got a full hearing at finance, but any questions from the board? I'm not seeing any questions, Mr. Brown. So I would entertain a motion for approval of item 6.1.
I move the item.
Motion by Director Peterson. We have a second. Second by Director Cooper. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Ozuchowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes, and that's resolution number SCV-341.
Thank you very much. That was well done. Move on to item 6.2, approved staffing for fiscal year 2023-24 and fiscal year 24-25. Once again, Rochelle Patterson is our presenter.
Yes, great. Let me just get to my notes. Okay, so the activities of the agency in its current form have increased since the merger. As we implement SCV Water's mission, face new challenges and mandates, strive to meet our operational maintenance requirements, and take on additional customers and facilities. The agency requires organizational changes to deal with these challenges. As part of the budget process each year, supervisors and managers review their departmental staffing levels. If there is a need to add staff, justification is requested in order for executive staff to review the proposed need and determine which position request to bring forward for consideration by the Finance Administration Committee and then ultimately the Board of Directors. For this particular presentation, the committee did receive the justification for the full 2 years. For this presentation, we're just scaling it down a little bit and discussing the justification for the first year of the position additions, which is for fiscal year 23 and 24. Next slide, April. So since the merger in January of 2018, staffing levels are projected to increase from 223 to 248 by fiscal year 24-25. The position increases the merger is 5, which is an average of 3.13 positions per year. So for the total budget impacts in fiscal year 23-24, is $586,000. And for fiscal year 24-25 is about $643,000. And the total for the biennial budget is $1.34 million. Next slide, April. So as previously mentioned at the beginning of the budget process, a request is made of each department to identify their staffing needs and propose additional staff for the upcoming biennial budget. The justification for additional staffing needs is reviewed at the executive staff meeting, and based on the justification, the general manager then directs management staff to present the recommended positions to each of their committees. The finance and staff performs an analysis of the proposed positions to be presented to the Finance Administration Committee in order to receive approval to incorporate the positions into the annual budget. Next slide, April. So based on the process described, funding for 7 regular positions and 1, the limited duration position, would be included in fiscal year 23-24 budget. and 7 regular proposed for fiscal year 24-25. And on your slide there, and also on your packet, are the positions that are being presented to be included in the budget. There are a couple that have, say, mid-year recruitments. I will talk a little bit about those. Those still need some type of class and comp study performed in order to add those to our class plan. And then there's a couple of positions that are actually have some expense offsets, such as the inspector and the fleet mechanic. Next slide, April. And then for our fiscal year 24-25 budget impact, it's projected at $687,000. And again, we do have a couple of mid-year recruitments, and also a couple of those positions, the engineer and another fleet mechanic, being offset by expenses that we currently incur for those, for that work. Next slide. So in order to keep the presentation brief, I will go over the justifications for the proposed positions just for fiscal year 23-24. And then again, the proposed positions for fiscal year 25 are all included in your board packet, but not in this presentation. So since SCV Water's formation, the Department of Water Resources has had 2 administrative support personnel. There have been a couple of changes that have driven the need for additional support. One is the new regulatory requirement of sustainable groundwater management and the corresponding formation of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. The GSA has necessitated significant staffing requirements specific to the area of administrative support, including existing departmental staff providing the duties of a board secretary for the GSA. The second major driving the need would be SCV Water's investment in grant administration. One of the historical administrative support staff positions was promoted to a management analyst too, and is performing significant duties as it relates to grant administration. This investment in more aggressively pursuing grant funding has resulted in the acquisition of over $18.5 million in grant funding to SCV service area in the last 2 years. SCV Water will be continuing to increase efforts to pursue additional funding, and the management analyst too will have additional responsibilities in managing the grants to ensure compliance with the terms and agreements. The new administration technician will fulfill the administrative duties required by the department that are no longer able to be provided by the management analyst too. Next slide. The senior water resource specialist. In the next decade, the water resource department will continue to be engaged in projects and policy initiatives that require expanding existing knowledge in water resource management and planning to address issues, including groundwater modeling, groundwater storage and recovery, groundwater dependent ecosystems, and managing aquatic environments. It will also allow the agency to identify and address new challenges in water quality and climate change that we currently rely on contractors to investigate. This is an advanced journey level position and will perform technical activities, initiatives, and functions intended to ensure regulatory compliance and long-term sustainability of the region's water resource programs identified in SCV Water and the GSA. Areas of expertise this position will include will be hydrogeology, hydrology, aquatic biology, and environmental science. This would be a new classification and requires a classification and compensation study to determine salary range. For budget purposes, this position has been placed at range 39, which is at the same range as the senior water resources planner. The annual salary is $137,000 plus burden and benefits of $60,000 for an annual impact of $197,000. Due to the complexity of this new classification and the need for the classification and compensation study, this position has been budgeted at mid-year and will have a budget impact of $98,000. Next slide. For the Inspector 2 position, the agency, after the merger, had 5 inspectors plus the inspection supervisor. Approximately 2 years ago, there was a vacancy in the inspection department. And rather than fill that position at the time, it was reclassified as a right-of-way agent. We have continued to use consultants for the inspection duties required for the development and capital improvement program projects to cover the gap left by the fifth inspector. Replacing the missing inspector would allow the agency to use in-house staff to cover some of the inspection needs of our CIP projects. Using consultants for CIP projects typically costs between $300,000 to $400,000 for a six-month project. This position is an existing classification of range 29. The annual salary is $84,000 plus burden and benefits of $36,000 for an annual impact of $121,000. Using in-house inspection would offset consultant costs and will be 70% billable to either CIP projects or developer projects for a budget impact of $36,000. Next slide. So the fleet mechanic is new position to the agency. The agency has more than 250 vehicles and equipment with more than 50 miscellaneous small equipment, which includes small generators, compressors, chainsaws, etc., some of which are specialty vehicles and equipment that can only be serviced by a limited number of mechanics. In some situations, the manufacturers for these types of equipment have told staff that they do not have enough mechanics to service the agency's equipment, and then it may take up to a month before they can send it to a mechanic. Having an in-house mechanic would allow the agency to reduce repair costs while also completing repairs in a timely manner, especially during emergencies. The addition of this position and one proposed in the fiscal year after will enable the agency to more be prepared in the event of emergency, outsourcing cost savings, shorter repair times. Most agencies, the size of SCB Water, have two plus in-house mechanics. This survey was presented to the Finance Administration Committee in November of 2022. This would be a new classification and requires a classification and compensation study to determine salary range, and that study is nearly complete. For budget purposes, this position has been placed at range 30. The annual salary is $88,572 plus burden and benefits of $38,547 for an annual impact of $127,000. In fiscal year 23-24, the mechanic position will have no budgetary impact, and in fiscal year 24-25 have approximately 50% impact. For the fiscal year 23-24, it will be zero, and in 24-25, about $63,000. Next slide. So this is a position, a limited duration position for the Water Conservation Specialist 2. So new water conservation legislative mandates anticipate significant conservation program revisions to achieve new mandates over the next few years. Water shortage contingency plan and water conservation and water supply shortage ordinance activation increases in water conservation program services and participation, expanses in strategic plan support, including sustainability efforts. This position is an existing classification at range 32. The annual salary is $97,680 plus burden and benefits of approximately $14,600, as those are limited, for an annual budget impact of $112,000. For the IT technician, as the agency's technology and systems have evolved, the agency now finds itself shorthanded when it comes to daily tasks and support. Three major events have happened to increase the need for an additional technician. The first is the remote work environment. Although staff are consolidating laptops and computers, staff has doubled peripherals and expanded troubleshooting since each remote employee now has a home workplace set up in addition to the work at home workplace that was already supported. Secondly, in the last 2 years, staff has worked with operations to deploy mobile technology, iPads, The agency has added 100 iPads to its system now that require monitoring, support, troubleshooting, and maintenance. Finally, the use of hybrid meetings has expanded. Not only do board and committee meetings require substantial technical support, but there are now additional agency-affiliated related meetings that also require support. Currently, the IT team has no redundancy and has to depend on overtime, strategic delaying of projects, and use of other non-designated staff to help at times. Further, in line with the succession planning and personal development to pass on institutional knowledge, this added entry-level position would support the agency's succession planning directive. This position is an existing classification at range 27. The annual salary is $76,524 plus burden and benefits of $33,303 for an annual budget impact of $109,827. Next slide. The creation of a new operational technology department has necessitated the need for additional personnel. Currently, the agency has one person in the SCADA classification, and this person possesses 20 years of SCV SCADA institutional knowledge. This person has designed, built, and maintained all of the Valley's SCADA systems. It would benefit the 204 or benefit the agency to train additional personnel for redundancy and shift from a reactionary maintenance to a planned and scheduled SCADA management. The agency's one SCADA person also fields all after-hour calls on holidays and weekends 24/7. The agency needs additional personnel to help balance the current and ever-expanding workload. The treatment plants and distribution systems are operated 24/7 by designated personnel with varying shifts. But this one SCADA person helps support all SCADA operations that serve these designated distribution and treatment operators. The agency needs to add two additional SCADA technicians in one in fiscal year 23-24 and one in fiscal year 24-25. This position is an existing classification range at 31. The annual salary is $93,000 plus burden and benefits of $40,000 for an annual operating budget impact in fiscal year 23-24 and 24-25 of $133,000 each. And I think this might be my last one. Next slide, HR specialists. There has been a temporary human resource specialist position with general HR skills and knowledge through a temporary service through June of 2021 through January of 2022. In addition, there has been a limited duration employee in this position for 12 months since February of 2022. Since the formation of SCV Water, HR section has processed many recruitments, retirements, benefits, and various projects with an unchanged staff level. As the agency continues to grow, the duties of the HR section have continued to increase. And it is apparent that without this additional position, the department would not be able to support all of the employees and directors in the agency whilst maintaining the HR functions necessary to achieve goals and accomplish new projects. The HR specialist will assist with the recruitment activities, creating personnel files, organizing new employee paperwork, filing and ordering ID badges, just to name a few duties. The position will be managing the HR SpiceWorks ticketing system and uploading documents to the HR SharePoint. As recruitment activity starts to pick up again, and for when the department plans to move forward on implementing Oracle or efficient systems and bring necessary duties and bring great value to the team. For this particular position, HR performed a survey of our benchmark agency as well as other public agencies to determine the ratio of HR staff to employees. Of the reporting benchmark agencies, the average ratio of HR staff to employees were 2.30 and 2.32 for other public agencies. The addition of this position will increase the agency's ratio of 1.66 to 2.07. which is more in line with our benchmark agencies. This position is an existing classification at range 27, and this position is currently being filled by a limited duration employee. The salary and limited benefits for this employee is included in the budget, and the annual budget impact to add this permanent position would be $6,000. So next slide. So the recommendation is that the Board of Directors authorize the funding to add the 7 regular positions and 1 limited duration position in fiscal year 23-24, and conditionally approve adding 7 regular positions in fiscal year 25. And I do want to say that each of the department managers and supervisors are also either in attendance or online. And if there's any specific questions on any of the positions, that they are here to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Rochelle, for your presentation. Excellent. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comments online on this item?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up for discussion. I would just like to say, I know we have received a number of presentations from staff, leadership, providing what I think is rather compelling justification for this. But since the creation of SCV Water, I think we've had a number of labor-intensive responsibilities added to our scope of work here at the agency. So this is not surprising. I appreciate that we have been able to maintain a rather level population since the beginning, and now some of these extra work items are starting to demand our attention. And with that, I'll open it up to other comments and questions from the board. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. Just a couple of them. The admin tech position that's kind of overlooking GSA, as well as the senior water resources specialist that's doing Sigma. Now, do some of those costs get reimbursed through the GSA? I mean, if that's what the job is support to the GSA, is that agency going to reimburse us for that?
President Martin, would you like me to answer? Yeah, go ahead. Yes, Director Cooper. So there is staff time that is built into the Groundwater Sustainability Agency budget. You'll probably recall that, you know, that Joint Powers Authority contracts with the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency to provide the staffing services for it. So we do budget for it. The revenue side of that equation is not balanced, right? Currently, the budget is that the contributing agencies support about $20,000 per year each. So that amount, yes, offsets part of that expense, but the majority of the expense for the Groundwater Sustainability Agency is borne by this agency. Now, we could look at additional fees or pumping fees, but in our basin, that is somewhat counterintuitive because the main pumpers are falling under kind of this agency's responsibility. So, but yes, we do budget for that time that is spent there in that budget.
So do we track that time that's spent on GSA?
We do.
Okay, because I think down the road at some point, there will be come a time that we're going to have to have some funds that come from that agency as well, which, of course, 90% of it then comes from us. But yeah. And my other one, in all my time, I never heard of limited duration positions. Is that once you hire on to a public agency and you complete your probationary period, you're a permanent employee? Could somebody explain what a limited duration permanent public employee is to me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead. Rochelle.
I was just going to say it's something that we added to the policy a few years ago. And I can tell you when it started is when we started the Oracle project to replace our finance management information system. We knew that we were going to take about 6 or 8 of our core staff and they were going to be assigned to that project, and we needed to backfill those positions. It's kind of hard to do that with temporary positions. So we were able to, and we knew the project was going to last for a while, and those limited duration employees can be in that position for 2 years. They're filling a role temporarily, but they are there for long term. And then once the project was done, then there is no need for that employee, and they then are released. They are at will employees. And it is good to have, and there are quite a few public agencies that have this limited term employee function. And it does work out well when there's a specific project that you need additional staff for a long period of time, but you don't really want a temporary employee. And you want just this limited duration employee that can be there for, 2 or 3 years maximum. So that's my spiel for a limited duration employee, but it is common in government agencies.
Yeah, Director Cooper, I just add on to that, when we know it's a limited duration, it's a little more upfront to hire that way. So we're not hiring someone and thinking they're in a permanent position. And because of the rules on vesting as a permanent employee, you can't really take temporaries too far. We usually go 6 months with kind of a hedge of a little bit beyond that, but technically anything beyond 6 months, we incur a little bit of potential liability for pension exposure there. So it is a little bit of a unique solution for a public agency to try to have that tool for a limited, say we had a particular one-off project that we're not going to do regularly. We might bring someone in as a temporary, maybe somebody that comes in to convert all of our past data or work on implementing a major system that's a one-time thing. And by advertising it that way, we're hopefully getting a person that's amenable to that arrangement. Maybe somebody late career that wants to take on an assignment or would not want to commit to a full-time ongoing position.
Have we run this through our legal department?
Yeah.
And that is an appropriate position, because usually to lay somebody off, it has to be a lack of work or a lack of funds that does it. And I guess maybe the lack of work part is once that project is done.
When the assignment comes to an end, a person could suitably complete an assignment and then find, if their skill set is amenable to taking another position that opens up in the future, they would certainly have the benefit of having had that exposure and experience working in the organization.
Right. And those limited duration employees do sign a contract, so they're fully aware of the rules.
Yes. And one comment you made, Rochelle, that our employees are a, what did you call them?
Are you talking about the limited duration employee being at will?
Our employees aren't at will employees.
No, they're not.
They're not, but the limited duration position is. That's a contracted position.
Okay. And I didn't see on these what the duration of this is, of the two positions.
It was, so the one position was currently in HR that we were asking to add as a regular full-time position. And that person was added to take on some additional projects as we were doing more recruitments and other HR work. And we've determined over the last couple of years that we really need that body, since we haven't added any staff to the HR department, but we, are adding employees and sometimes more complex issues. The one that we're asking to add in the conservation group has to do with some new legislation that's coming down where we need somebody to gather a lot of data and do that and, reports and whatever we need for that particular legislation. But we anticipated that we would be gathering all that data and have that information complete over 2 years. So they're a limited duration employee we're anticipating to have for the two fiscal years.
Okay. And then there was another position. Was there a government affairs position that you're asking for in the next budget as well in this? I didn't see that.
Yes, the justification is in your packet, but I'll go ahead and let Steve or Kathy talk about that one.
Okay. Sure. I can walk through that one, Director Cooper. Yes, we presented at committee the potential for retaining a full-time legislative analyst position for us. I think, the basic justification that as we walked through there was just being able to focus more on that aspect of the agency's responsibility. Currently, that responsibility kind of falls on a group, including myself and Kathy. And we have a group of consultants, right, that are on our team, both at the state, federal, and local level. So the concept was to bring on a full-time position, kind of much like the city does, right, with their local government affairs person, who used to be Michael Murphy, is now Masis. And just having that focus on that activity to make sure that we are directing our state and federal and local efforts in a productive way. And so that was the value proposition. We discussed the opportunity to transition our local representative, and so to try and offset some of those costs, if that's what the board would like to do.
Very good. Thank you.
Welcome. Vice President Ozahowski.
Just to piggyback on that question and comment. So as far as the government affairs analyst, what will happen to our current consultants in DC and state and local? Will they still be utilized, or will they be utilized less? How would that work?
I would think, Director Ozahowski, that the hope is that our advocates at the state and federal level would be used more, more effectively, I guess, right? They do a great job for us now. I think we've seen the results of a lot of their good work. But focused communication with them on, the issues and engagement on those issues in a more consistent way, a deeper way. On some of these issues like PFAS, for example, and the regulatory standard for that. That is a really heavy lift to try and engage, the right agencies and have an impact in that. You have to be consistent. You have to have a good message developed and all of those things. So it's things like that that we would hopefully be better prepared for in the way that we go about that. On the local one, that is where we're looking to transition to having somebody actually on staff in that position. We haven't walked through fully yet what that transition would look like. And we would be looking at that kind of over this next year about how to best handle the local representation.
Okay, understood. Thank you. One more question. For the fleet mechanic, there have been a lot of catalytic converter thefts in our area. And I know that we are outsourced putting cages on them on our trucks. Will the new fleet mechanic be doing that in-house, Ms. Patterson?
Yeah, I will have to ask Jesus if he's the fleet and warehousing supervisor, if he is on to answer that specific question.
Jesus?
Rochelle, I don't see him.
Yeah. Okay.
If you, this is Mike.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. Yeah, I would assume that the in-house mechanic would do that. really, we have a fleet now of, well over 200 vehicles. And I think the goal for what Jesus, at least in my communications with him, was to have an in-house mechanic do most, if not all, of the routine light maintenance work on the vehicles, brakes, oil, belts, things like that. So I don't see why they wouldn't also put on the catalytic converter protectors. And I think some of them are also new vehicles are coming with those protectors already in place.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Any other questions? Vice President Gutzeit.
Thank you. Yeah, we did talk about the government affairs at POL to the extent that Mr. Cole said. I wanted to, and then also at Finance Administration, we talked at length about both years of these positions. And I think the point is well taken that all of the new requirements on the agency are leading to many of these positions. When we have additional requirements, it's just inevitably going to be an additional cost. I really liked what HR did as far as benchmarking the HR staff per the size of the agency. And I had raised a question about, you know, how do we know as a board what the right size for this agency is? You know, we don't want to be too big. We don't want to be too small. And certainly anybody in the private sector and probably in government sector too, just always feels like there's more work to be done. So where's the right line to stop at? And I had an additional discussion with General Manager Stone about the right size for the agency. He actually took some of his personal time to look up some comparable agencies. And we talked at length about, you know, what is the agency doing? What is, it's not just connections, but also responsibilities. And that was pretty reassuring to me. I think in general, we're right in the ballpark with comparable agencies. So I think we looked at Irvine and East Bay, Eastern Water District, Eastern Municipal. So I felt like we were in the right ballpark. I would like to see that in future discussions, just, you know, to see if overall we're in the right ballpark. But I did have that offline conversation this year. And he also talked to me about the time that is spent by staff evaluating whether we can do these limited duration positions or whether it's prudent to rely on consultants for some things. So they are spending a lot of time before it comes to us to see if this is the right thing to do, which I appreciate because, you know, we can't grow forever, but it does seem like they put a lot of thought into the right growth for right now. So I just wanted to mention that, and I approve of the changes.
Vice President Ozahosky.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that as well. Thank you, staff, for presenting these positions at our committee meetings in great detail and telling us exactly why these positions are needed and presenting evidence of your need. I would say that I speak for most of the board by saying that, you know, please continue doing that in the future. It's very helpful to make this decision at a regular board meeting. So with that saying, I motion to approve this this resolution.
Make a motion? That's your motion? Yes. Okay. Let's take Director Armitage's question and comment before we do that.
Thank you. First of all, thank you, Ms. Patterson, for the memo and your presentation. First, I wanted to say I do echo Director Cooper's sentiment that that perhaps some of the other GSA agencies should be contributing to the cost of the staff member working on GSA-related work. So I know I hear what you're saying, but I feel like maybe there's some wiggle room for negotiation in the future as we kind of understand the costs more and more related to this. Secondly, I appreciate the emphasis that is made on how some of these new positions could actually bring cost savings. And I think it's important for the public in particular to make sure that they hear that too. I mean, I know we talked about the government affairs analyst, how that would likely be a sunset of one contract that would then be transitioned to that position. And I appreciate the emphasis for the inspector two position and on how it could help with significant consultant costs. So thank you for that. And then Vice President Wazowski, you just mentioned about the fleet mechanic, how we could be saving repair costs with that position. So I think that's important for the public to hear. And then lastly, I appreciated the level of detail that was provided to, I think it was Water Resources, on the difference between the senior water resources specialist position and the water resources specialist position that I don't feel like got included in this memo. And so I'm wondering if you could take a moment to explain that for us, please.
Sure. We did have quite a bit of discussion at the Water Resources Committee about kind of the appropriateness of a senior versus a specialist position. I think what you're going to see us do, as was presented by Ms. Patterson tonight, is go through an analysis, outsourcing of really developing that class, so that we will have, I think, the tools necessary to communicate where in those classes we need to recruit. I think what we tried to communicate in the committee is that there's an immediate need for a higher level staffing person right now, so that it's not somebody that's going to need a lot of training, but somebody that's going to be able to hit the ground running in dealing with a lot of the issues that we're dealing with. So that was the reasoning behind kind of the senior level request, and then following that up in the next budget cycle with a specialist request. I'll put a little hanger in there that we'll see after we get through that process of developing the class and that first recruitment and how that goes. I know Director Marks had expressed a desire to fill both at a senior level, and I definitely respect Dirk's opinion on that. So we'll see in the next mid-budget cycle whether that's a better position to bring back to the board for consideration or not. But right now it's budgeted to be a senior in the mid-year of the first fiscal year, and then a specialist in the second fiscal year. Hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, I think I heard a little bit about how one would be more of like a hydrology geology, hydrogeology focus, and the other would be kind of a biology type of focus. Is that still the kind of the line of thinking?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah, and maybe I missed Mark a little bit on the question that you were asking, Director Armitage. So yes, that. The immediate need that we're feeling right now is somebody that has hydrogeology and hydrology experience. We're doing a lot of groundwater modeling, and having somebody with that skill set on staff that can really help us guide our consultants to get the best outcome and value out of the work that they're doing. So, yes, the senior was looking at somebody with that type of experience. And then the next position was trying to build our depth on more kind of the environmental aspect and biology aspect of the position.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the board? All right. We have a question from our General Manager Stone.
Well, I have a comment, which is ill-advised. They always say, if it's going well, don't talk more. And I'll probably regret that. But, you know, actually, I wanted to comment on the conversation that I had with Director Gutzeit, because it, you know, oftentimes it starts out as a question and it turns into a conversation that's clarifying on both sides of the conversation. And so I want to share some things that were kind of clarified. We, you know, when I reflected on how we arrived here with these proposed staffing levels, I started to think about, in addition to benchmarking, which can give you some general indications of where you are, what other factors did we really look at? And some of those come out in the analysis when you read them, but I thought I'd collect them in one summary, just maybe turn this into a moment we can all crystallize our thinking together on that. I think, you know, I would go through about six or seven key questions that get asked. Is this an activity that can be done more efficiently or effectively with in-house staff versus outside services. So that might include cost. It might include span of control. But sometimes there are things that are just so mission critical that you want to have direct control of them, as opposed to things that you might send out to a consultant. But mostly, you know, what resonated with that thought quite a bit was the construction inspection on the cost standpoint. That it was very clear that the current market for contracted construction inspection is pricey. And it may not have always been that way, but it is now. And having in-house services gives you really two things. One, you save money. And two, as that inspector learns your norms and your standards and learns the contractors in the area, they're going to be familiar with that process going forward. So there's probably some additional value there that's added. Another is, are we keeping up with appropriate workload or performance expectations? So, you know, Mike's the great example. I think you may remember a few months ago, he made a presentation about operations and where we are on certain benchmarks. And, you know, probably like many agencies, we're probably not hitting the maintenance intervals that we should be for the long haul, you know, for the 40-year view or the 50-year view. And every year we get closer to that without hitting those intervals, we're accumulating a deficit of maintenance. So even the proposals that we brought forward don't probably get us all the way there, but they do move us closer in that direction. And, you know, I think it's important to understand that that proposal really came out of trying to make sure that we're catching up to workload there. Similarly, HR staffing, we had a limited duration employee thinking we're in a surge. And then we found the surge is ongoing. So at that point, you know, we're not actually adding a new capacity there. We're continuing a capacity that was otherwise going to come to an end with that limited duration employee, I believe. Those are the kinds of things, questions that, you know, kind of focus around that idea. I think the third is, and particularly kind of fits our trying to grow into our role here, is it a new activity or an expanded activity that is of strategic value or importance? So for example, for the new agency, we are trying to engage more in the watershed issues, which really weren't being engaged in by any of the predecessors to a large degree. And so having that capability, and it's not just we want that feather in our cap. I think what we're finding is it matters, right? Everything we do that touches that watershed is a constraint or an opportunity for us. So for example, if we're ever going to get larger scale recycled water off the ground, we have to have compelling and credible presence and knowledge and data to interact with the regulatory bodies that oversee the Santa Clara River and the species and habitat there. So we're trying to grow that capacity, not just, again, so we can say, hey, yeah, we're doing watershed. It's that has real value to our resource plan in the long run. And that's the context. Is it a new mandated activity or maybe a little bit of both from the previous one? You know, is a little bit of a new mission and a new mandate? Certainly GSA is a little bit of both. It was mandated, but I think we're finding it will have some value for us in the long run in expanding our own technical understanding of how the basin operates and how to operate it the best we can. The fifth would be, is there a structural need for balancing the span of control within a department? Sometimes you have a situation where it just gets a little overloaded for a foreman or supervisor or manager at some level where they've got just too many direct reports. And when you have an opportunity where somebody retires, you maybe can restructure a bit and even out that workload, but that requires creating another position, you know, two foremen instead of one, or two supervisors instead of one. But it has benefits to the function of the organization. The sixth example I can think of is sometimes we add, it's not so much adding a new body, but we will expand a position series to make sure that there's upward growth potential for employees so we can keep employees for the long haul. So when we go from a 1 and a 2 to a 1-2 senior or 1-2 principal or associate principal, you know, senior in engineering. That there's a strategy there to try to make sure we can retain longer term employees as they grow in their capabilities and tenure. And then kind of looping back to benchmarking, it does have a role. There are different kinds of benchmarking. You can look at, you know, overall metrics for agencies, which is what I kind of walked through with Director Gutzeit on the phone, just kind of getting some general idea. And, you know, as an overall agency, you'll see some scale differences. The larger you get, that ratio of staff to whatever should drop a little bit. We saw that with the merger. There was a scale benefit there. Newhall was a very good agency, but their employee to connection ratio was higher than Valencia or Santa Clarita. And in combining, we're able to benefit from some of that scale, but we're starting to absorb that in catching up to some things too. The other way is by department, and that can be very useful. I think in the HR case, HR is very portable in that sense that most public agency HR is like a lot of public agency HR, so you can benchmark by employee size or complexity. It might give or take a little bit based on whether you have five labor unions or none, in terms of that might affect half a position of just somebody having to negotiate all the time. But generally, that's more benchmarkable. You have to be careful benchmarking maintenance, because then you have to know whether the maintenance is actually at the intervals that you want to achieve. You could look at an agency and say, gosh, they only have 3 crews to do this. How come we have 4? But you got to go a little deeper and look at what are they actually accomplishing with 3 crews, and are they keeping up or are they incurring a deficit as well? So they're good questions to get. And then I think benchmarking back to our own performance expectations. And I think you saw that with the one of the engineering requests. Courtney explained that very well to the committee. We have it in the budget. We're going to continue to look at whether we think we need it. If things really slow down with the engineering counter and the turnaround on construction work, we may not need to add that position as soon. We may hold off. But it also begs the question, what do we want that turnaround to be? Do we want it to be 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 10 weeks? And particularly since most of that's funded by the fees that developers pay, that kind of service interval is somewhat self-funding as well. So I just want to pull out a few of those highlights, and I do appreciate the board's a careful consideration of these requests this year. I know that, you know, particularly doing a 2-year budget, it's a lot of positions. But I do think it's important to go through this process. I told you a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago, I was going to take our executive team through kind of a SCV Water 2.0 exercise. And I would say this is a pretty good down payment on that. And as we get through our strategic plan, we'll probably see what else shakes out. So thank you.
Director Cooper, you had a comment?
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Stone. One concern that I have over, I guess, our classifications of employees, for the size of our agency at 200 and something employees, we're like 221, I think we are right now. And then we're adding some positions on, where we're adding more classifications. And it seems that we have a lot of classifications for the number of employees that we have. It's like everybody has their own class. And I know a lot of organizations have looked at levels of responsibility and kind of who they report to and where they get their information, that you determine that level of responsibility in the position. And so you'll have positions that'll say engineering tech 1, 2, 3, 4, and senior and principal engineering techs. And that can take in positions from all different kinds of classes of people, of different kinds of work. It can be SCADA work, it could be whatever incorporated into those job descriptions, to where you get down to fewer and fewer job descriptions. it makes it easier in your when you go out and do an analysis with other agencies, because a lot of agencies do that, is incorporate many different skills within a classification. So just a thought for you in the future, something to take a look at in the number of classes that you have.
I did the backwards, I turned it off. Just like online. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's in our next class in comp, I think we could ask the question, do we have too many? Or if we look at peers, are there areas where they've combined certain classes to have a broader reach for those series than we do? So certainly can ask that question.
All right. We do have a motion. Before I ask for the second, I just wanted to add one more comment to my earlier comment. Number one, I know it's not the easiest thing in the world to come and ask for a two-year program where we're adding this many positions, but I think staff has gone above and beyond meeting with the committees and providing the justification in a very comprehensive way. And as I said, I think it's pretty compelling evidence that we do need these positions. I don't think anyone would be asking for positions that we don't really need. But I do think there's some resistance to taking that step, and you try to do too much, which I've always wondered about engineering, how long they can continue to do the workload that they've had on their plate. So I just want to say I appreciate the staff's effort to come to the committees on an individual basis and provide the comprehensive justification for the positions before it comes to the board. I do appreciate that. And so with that, do we have a motion? Do we have a second for the approval of the item? Director Marks seconds the motion. If there's no further discussion, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahofsky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Thank you very much. We move on to item 6.3, approve a proposed employee salary adjustment for fiscal year 2023-24. Ms. Patterson, you're up again.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start, and Matt can could tag team it if there are any additional questions. So historically, the agency has considered a COLA adjustment to salaries based on the change in the consumer price index from December to December, which we typically do about this time each year before we approve the budget, so we know what we should include in the budget. But at the last meeting, or last year around this time, we had a director ask to also look at the ECI index. So we did incorporate it this year. It's also included in your backup. So we compare the CPI data and the ECI data, and the ECI is the employer cost index. So the CPI measures the average change over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a market basket of consumer goods and services, whereas the ECI is a survey of employer payrolls conducted that measures the change in total employee compensation each quarter. There are other measures of inflation that people may hear about, like core inflation, which excludes food and energy. CPI is generally used when determining wage adjustments, but the agency will continue to look at CPI and ECI annually when establishing the general wage adjustment. So just looking back for year 2021, the CPI year-over-year change in December was 6.94%. And then that same time, the ECI change was 5.5%. And after discussion and consideration of both of those metrics, the committee had then, and the board ultimately had approved a 5.5% COLA adjustment for fiscal year 22-23. So the attachment one shows the recent history of the agency's general wage adjustments. Attachment two reflects the CPI data from 2018 and the ECI data from 2020 until present. That's when we first started recording that particular metric. And that illustrates the percentage change from each month from the same month in the prior year. So when we come forward to the calendar year 2022, the CPI year over year change from December was 4.62%. And the ECI data has a year over year change of 5.9% for the same period. So given that the 2 year December to December CPI change a total of 11.56 and the 2 year ECI change of 11.4%, and with the COLA being approved last year at 5.5, agency staff wanted to provide and calculate the impact at a range that could be discussed at 5%, a 5.5%, and a 6%. And whatever that recommendation was would have been included in the fiscal year 23-24 budget. The analysis is in your packet. And ultimately, the committee, when they discussed it, they had chosen to have the COLA majority of the committee to be at 6%, which is the total budget impact of about $1.5 million. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommends that the Board of Directors approve a cost of living adjustment at 6% for fiscal year 23-24 for all employees except the general manager. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Patterson. Any public comment, Madam Secretary?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up for questions, discussions, or a motion. Looking around. Director Peterson.
After much discussion at the Finance Committee, we as a majority decided to go with the 6%, and I would like to make that motion.
Very good. We have a motion by Director Peterson. Director Cooper.
All right. I'll second Director Peterson's motion. You know, a 6% cost of living increase is big. We haven't seen that kind of a cost of living increase till clear back, I think, in the late 80s, early 90s that we've seen those days. So I think in trying to keep up with the cost of living for the employees, I think it's absolutely something that we need to do.
Great. Vice President Gutzeit.
I support the 6%. We had some discussion, and that was the commentary on the CPI versus employer cost index. And we just felt that we wanted to make sure we retain the best employees that we can and make sure that we're offering competitive pay to attract people and retain them. So that's why the majority of the committee went with that.
Director Marks.
I support Vice President Kutsait's comments. Being competitive in the market is critical for retaining qualified staff.
Very good. Any other questions or comments? Well, I'd like to thank the committee and staff on the work they did to put this together. I especially appreciate the 2 year look-see and the recommended 6% is one that comes the closest to making the employees whole, bring them back to their buying power that they had before this inflationary period set in. And I think the 6% is well justified. And so, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Board. Thank you, staff, very much. And move on to item 7, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay. Well, seeing as it's only 7:15. No, I have a report prepared, and I will try to cover just 4 items tonight. We'll do the sandwich approach, the bread being the good part. So we'll start with the best piece of bread, which was after much anticipation through the COVID restrictions. We've had the idea for so long. We were finally able to, our staff team and a group of interested customers completed our first Water Academy this past Saturday. There were 4 sessions, 3 on weekday evenings, the 4th taking place Saturday right here in the Discovery Room, where participants actually put together the same treatment plant model that the 5th graders put together, and they did do it in less time. That was a little bit of a pressure point there, but they did. They beat the clock and had a tour of the plant. We had a very engaged group from the public and an equally enthusiastic staff team, which when I added it up, almost outnumbered the number of public. When you look at the number of people who had a chance to either assist in the support role or speak to our group over those 4 sessions. I want to extend my compliments to our staff members who made their time available to both develop and present the material, even though we were super busy. The PFAS thing hit us right when that was about to happen. And you know, Mike and Ryan still showed up and did a great job, as well as our lab staff. A couple of comments I picked up from participants just as we were going through the process. One approached me Saturday and said that the enthusiasm and passion of your staff really shines through. So that made a big impression on this individual. Another noted that she was impressed to learn how much is going on behind the scenes and felt reassured that we were working hard to provide high quality water for the community. So I think as a beta test, it was a success. There are some, we will work on wrinkles and flow and things like that, but it was overall outstanding. We'll be getting feedback from the participants. We got a little bit Saturday as well, just in a little bit of extra time we had from the instructors, and fine-tune the program. But I would say that initial feedback was great to hear. I normally try not to name everybody because I don't want to forget someone. So I'm going to say right off the bat, if I forget anybody, please, staff, don't feel bad. But I want to name everybody who had a role in this tonight. So buckle up. Laura Gallegos, who led the development of the program. Lindsay Gibson and Casey Gordon for just being super support all the way through. Jonathan Thomas Aguilar for the technology and audio visual magic. Robert Bradford in building and grounds for setup, as well as a parking lot security over at our parking lot management over at Pine Street. Robert McLaughlin, a jack of all trades, helping out in addition on logistics. Our presenters, Sarah Fleury, Matt Dickens, Julia Groth, Siobhan Halushka, Dolores Campos, Steve Cole, Mike Alvord, Courtney Mayo, Ryan Bai, Dean Takashima, who worked some magic with little bottles of cloudy raw water and had people put in flocculants and things like that. That was really cool. Jeff Kulawine, Casey Gordon, I think I might have mentioned her twice, so good for her. Kathy Martin, Doreen Connor, Rochelle Patterson, Kathleen Wilson, Barbara Colley, and Pandora Estrada are 2 teachers who took the group through the building of the model. And last but not least, Rafael Paludo, who took them through the treatment plant. And I learned some things about our treatment plant that I didn't know. He's passionate, and poor Kathy had to keep saying, or no, I think it was actually Laura. Okay, we got to go. But the best part was the public kept asking more questions, and that was great. Also want to thank our board member observers who came one or more times during the process and adhered to our request that they observe. That must have been hard, so thank you for that. Overall, just great job, and felt really good about our first effort, and we'll see what the future ones bring. On the theme of out-of-the-box invigorating activities, last Wednesday I was fortunate enough to attend our tour of several United Water Conservation District facilities. We had a number of board members on that tour as well as some of our water resources staff. You could not have timed this better with the year that we've had. You had we met down Oxnard. We went up to drove up to Lake Piru, heard all about things going on the way up, saw a full Piru reservoir and water spilling over the spillway at the Santa Felicia Dam. Heard all about that, heard about their massive effort to clean up all the debris that's floating on the lake. Drove across the spillway bridge, walked on the dam, heard some really colorful stories on the way back to the Freeman diversion structure, in our bus at least. Freeman diversion structure, which can route a portion of Ventura River flows into a side channel where high sediment loads are settled into ponds and then routed to recharge basins. And in a year like this, a tremendous amount of water can be recharged into the ground. This has been going on for quite a long time in that stretch of the river. And there are some ponds that have recharge rates as high as 14 feet a day. So I think they're their most incredible performing pond. Not all, but pretty impressive operation. Then finally, we after lunch, we went down and saw a groundwater production and treatment facility that produces this recharged groundwater back out of the ground, puts it into clear wells, and then pumps it on demand out to some of the coastal areas so they don't pump as much groundwater. It's sort of a seawater intrusion management and conjunctive use project. And they were also adding a treatment plant for iron and manganese. And I admit I was a little jealous that they're only having to treat for iron and manganese at this point, but I told them my fingers are crossed for them. Let's see. Another thing I wanted to just kind of make the board aware of, you know, while we wait for the appellate process to wind its way through on our favorable central court jury and court verdict in SCVWA versus Whitaker, we are continuing to operate the Saugus 1 and 2 perchlorate treatment facility. We actually have some rehab work coming up this year on the wells there to keep them performing well. We are advancing new treatment projects to at V201 to add VOC removal to the existing perchlorate system. And at V205, we're designing the facilities to address both perchlorate and VOCs there. Meanwhile, because it's the gift that keeps on giving, action continues with Whitaker or its successor and DTSC, the Department of Toxic Substances Control. In February, Whitaker's consultants submitted an what's called an OU7 groundwater remedial action and completion and implementation report, or RACR, 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 I don't know. They call it a racer. Okay. OU7 is code for the stuff offsite from Whitaker. That's our groundwater basin. So when they did the cleanup plan, they designated operable units, and our OU7 is groundwater. So that's really important to us. And we're quite concerned that they are proposing that DTSC deem that the groundwater remedial action is complete. We have had one meeting with DTSC. We are going to have another coming up. We've had technical consultants review, and we will be conveying our strong disagreement with that proposal shortly. I wanted to make the board aware of it because at some point we may be escalating that conversation to Sacramento DTSC for further discussion. I'll just probably leave that for the details since this is open session. But if you do hear of that conversation, I didn't want you to be caught off guard that's happening. And I think we're within our administrative role to be, you know, pursuing the district's interest in that discussion. And then finally, to end with some good news. As you know, on March 24th, you probably have heard that the State Water Project allocation was increased to 75% for this year. We all knew something was coming, and we figured it would be fairly high given the wet year and the high snowpack. And so we had started strategizing and moving some water, but not knowing exactly what that allocation would be. It certainly sealed the deal, but we were pretty, you know, our two of our key staff, I think Sarah and Najwa, took a lot on in analyzing options, reaching out to partners that we've traditionally had for exchanges, our banking. And I'm happy to report, we were able to evacuate all of our water that was stored in San Luis that was at risk of spill, either through moving into storage. And this is at a time when everybody was trying to move their water into storage. So we had to kind of patiently wait in line while the lifeboats were being boarded with, you know, local people in the Central Valley who should get priority. But we did get some in there. And then we did a nice, I think, a good creative deal with Metropolitan, where they have a lot of ability to move water quickly because they have half the capacity. They have half the conveyance capacity, and probably way more than half in the southern part of the project. So they were able to move our carryover water out, and then they will exchange it back on a, for every 3 acre feet we gave them, they'll give us 2 acre feet back later on. That's as opposed to losing it all if it spills. If it spills and it's displaced by current year water filling up San Luis, we don't really get that back other than it goes into the kitty for everybody. So we think this was a good kind of a win-win deal. Now our attention is turned to what do we do to save as much of the present year water as we can. And we know, of course, with the upcoming reduction in the PFAS regulations, the stakes are high there to make sure we have as much water stored as we can. Our team is now working on that. And I imagine we'll end up with some, you know, as much as we can put into banking programs that we can get back out, and a strategic amount of water and carryover in San Luis again, with some risk assessment of that. And then further potential exchange agreements with partners where the terms would be able to bring that water back in years where we might need it because of PFAS impacts. So that's it doesn't sound like good news, but actually is good news. I'd rather be dealing with this deck of cards than the one we might have had with another dry year. So that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Do we have any public comment, April?
We do not.
Very good. We have any questions or discussion? Director Cooper.
Matt, since there's an abundance of water this year, is there any opportunity to increase the size of our storage programs in Rosedale, Rio Bravo, or Semitropic? Are they interested in us putting more water into the ground than we have?
Yeah, I didn't want to get too granular, but yes, the contract we can put up to 20,000, and they've indicated they've done this, I think, in another year. They'll try to work with us to get more in if they can, and that might include a discussion about does that in any way allow us to alter the terms of the program, either an extension or something else if needed. So they've been a very good partner, and we're trying to maintain that.
Well, we were limited at about, 160 or something, wasn't it, with Rosedale?
Yeah, we won't be hitting that cap. It's more the annual put that we're going to have to work around, that we may have enough water to go over the 20,000 put. But anyway, our staff are on it, so I will try not to play amateur hydrologist. But I know enough to be excited. It's the funniest
game. Any other questions from the board? Comments? Thank you very much, Matt. We can move on to Item 8, committee meeting recap reports for information purposes only. There are two reports in your packet today. Before I ask for any questions from the board, do we have any public comment?
We do not.
Very good. Any questions from the board on the committee reports? Seeing none, we move on to item 9, written reports for informational purposes only. We have four section reports as well as a section calendars included in your packet. Are there any public comment, April?
There is not.
Very good. Any questions from the board on the written reports? On direct, Vice President Ozahusky.
The question on page 308, that's part of item 9.2. The staff attended a ride and drive event for heavy duty electric and hydrogen trucks. Mr. Allward, since Jesus is not here, can you tell me what the staff thought about these vehicles in terms of comparing them to what we have right now in our fleet?
Director Ozahofsky, Jesus is, he should be on the call now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Good evening, board. The event is, I think, very informative. It gives us a better idea of where the vendors are in their manufacturing process. A lot of these are startups. So to see the product, right, and actually get to test drive it, you can see whether this is, you know, something that's going to be on the streets or whether it's more just a project that they're working on. As far as the comparison, they're early in the development, but I would say that they have a lot of great potential. So these are first drafts, right? So the range is very minimal. The applications are very minimal, but I think it gives us, makes us optimistic, I think, for the technology to continue to get better and better. And part of the new regulations is that, you know, you have to be aware of what's available that you can purchase or not. And attending these events are very informative for that. So one of the ones that we got to test, for example, was the Nikola semi-truck. And that was actually very impressive compared to some of the other hydrogen trucks that were a little bit more sluggish.
Thank you, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, we're all aware of CARB's proposed advanced clean fleets regulations that is coming. The question is, you know, can these vehicles do the work that our current vehicles can do now on a regular basis and during emergencies? Based on your assessment, can they perform the same kind of duty in emergencies?
No, not at the moment. Okay. So, and the manufacturers are telling that to CARB. Public agencies and industry groups are communicating that with CARB. The utilities are telling that to CARB. So everyone's submitting those comments. But CARB's response so far is the technology will catch up, you know, at some point. Yeah. But not in its current configuration.
I've read the verbiage from CARB. It's very futuristic and not sometimes not realistic. With your conversations with the manufacturers of these vehicles, do you know they are fully insured? Do they have a steady stream of cash flow? Do they spoke about, you know, production schedules, any potential clients, anything like that?
It's a little bit all over the place, depending on the manufacturer. Our biggest concern is whether they're going to be around in 5 or 10 years to honor the warranty. So I think a lot of the startups are not at the point, right, where they're financially able to really do that. And also the production, they're very limited in production, right? They can maybe make 10 a year or, you know, 20 max. But if CARB is mandating everybody to purchase those vehicles, then they're not going to be able to keep up with the manufacturing. And we see that with Ford as well, struggling to keep up with the demand. And when the new regulations go into effect, everybody's going to have a hard time, you know, keeping up with making enough vehicles to satisfy the purchasing needs of public agencies and the private sector.
Okay. Thank you, Jesus. And thank you for keeping us updated on that. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director, Vice President Ozahowski. Any other questions? Director, Vice President Gusait.
Well, just on that point, I think I'll mention something that I emailed, I think, to the officers in response to a little discussion on the electric vehicle mandates. And I just wanted to share that I was at a work conference where I heard from a CARB and AQMD board member. He was presenting, and there were people in the audience saying that, you know, they were we're not the only ones. They were very concerned about deadlines, availability. Some had already ordered trucks from name, I want to say it was Kenilworth, a name truck brand, but they said that the earliest they'd see them 4 years from now. Interestingly, we had a commentary also from Dan Walters of who writes in the paper in Sacramento Bee. He said the CARB's estimate, they also asked about grid reliability to support all this. For instance, CARB is estimating 20% of California's power by within 5 years will be wind. No, 7 years, wind, offshore wind, which like the room laughed. So there's a lot of things stacked on top of each other to make this happen. But CARB was emphasizing that we should take it seriously. And if we don't take it seriously, it will be a problem. So even if you order something and don't get it, it's going to be better than not trying. And they were very adamant about that. So we shall see. Thanks.
Director Cooper.
Yes, just a note on that too, is Aqua is working in the background trying to get an exemption for water utilities for the large vehicles. For cars and the rest of that, no, but for large emergency response vehicles, they're trying to get an exemption. No luck so far, but they're working on it.
Good. Director Armitage.
And to piggyback on your comment, I think I mentioned last time that CSDA, California Special District Association, is kind of trying to organize the other special districts outside of water, since they know water is being handled by Aqua. So just wanted to repeat that. Did anybody else want to say anything on that before I? Okay, I didn't want to break up that.
Actually, these are questions and comments on the written reports, right?
No. Yes, but I have one more set of comments. This is related to the water resources and outreach section report.
Yes.
I just wanted to say I appreciated the notes that were included that show the work that's being done with staff, with specific HOAs. I know I've mentioned that before. I'm really excited to see HOAs hopefully reaching out to our staff and asking for information on what they can do with their large areas of landscape to conserve water. So that's very exciting to me to see that. So thank you for sharing that with us. You mentioned the Fix a Leak video. I just wanted to say a huge shout out to all the staff and all the people who had cameo appearances in it. That was really fun to watch and see all the little cameos that staff had in that video. And hopefully people paid attention to the message in that. I have a little happy face next to the insert happy dance comment that you put into the report that talked about the launch of the website, which I know was had a lot of stumbling blocks. So I put a little smiley face there because I know that was something your staff was very happy to finally accomplish. So and then my only question was already answered in the discussion by General Manager Stone. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further questions on item 9, we can move on to item 10. Was there a response to Director Armitage on that one, or was there not?
I was trying to, I apologize. I was reading an email from Rochelle. It's not Rochelle's fault. It's my fault. But was it a question for me?
I apologize. No, I was saying you actually preemptively answered a question had from
perfect.
What you brought up during your general manager report. So good job.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Then I will rest on that. Yeah.
All right. We can move on to item 10, President's report. I have an update on a few items outside of the agency conference and events. The AWA 31st Annual Water Symposium being held Thursday, April 20 at the Courtyard by Marriott in Oxnard. The DCA Delta Conveyance Tour being held on April 26 in Sacramento. To my knowledge, we still have open seats if there's another director or staff member would like to attend. There'll be the Southern California Water Coalition quarterly luncheon being held on April 28th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Wilson Creek Winery in Temecula. State of the County is being held May 31st, 11:30 at the Hyatt Regency. Upcoming board meetings, start time 6 p.m., the regular board meeting April 18th, and the regular board meeting on May 2nd. Upcoming committee meetings, held at the Summit Circle, the April 6th Engineering and Operations Committee, the April 12th Water Resources and Watershed Committee, and the April 20 Public Outreach and Legislation Committee. Upcoming committee meetings at Rio Vista, April 17th, 2023 Finance and Administration Committee. For those attending Aqua, please be aware that there is a yellow folder at each of your spots. All your Aqua information, with all your Aqua information. In addition, for those attending Aqua, there is one more spot available for a board member to attend the briefing on the status of the Delta Conveyance Project on May 9th at 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Please let April know if you would like to attend. Staff members attending Aqua are welcome to attend as well. Again, please let the board secretary know if you would like to be added to the list. That concludes the President's report. Do we have any public comment? We have any questions from the board? We do not, right? Okay. All right. I don't see any questions from the board. We can move on to item 11, AB 1234, reports. There were two reports that were included in your board packet and three reports that were posted to the SCV Water website, emailed, and are at each of our spots. Does anyone have an additional AB 1234 report? Director Marks.
Yes, on March 30th, I attended a virtual workshop that the chamber sponsored on new organics recycling requirements that will be implemented beginning in July in our service area. In addition, I also attended today's monthly FIA meeting, which was held at the COC University Center.
Thank you. Any other AB 1230, Director Armitage?
Thank you. So I had the pleasure of attending and observing the Water Academy classes that were held on March 22nd, March 29th, and April 1st. And General Manager Stone did a really good job talking about how wonderful it was, but I'll just say that I also learned from staff as well, and particularly from the TDOMS crew and the information that was shared about the great work that happens in our lab. So very much appreciated that. And it was really great to see the participants be so engaged and have such great questions. So thank you again to everybody who was a part of that. And then secondly, I also attended the tour by United Water Conservation District on March 29th. You also did a great job on summarizing that. So I'll just say that there was a lot to learn, but mostly I appreciated learning about their strategy for groundwater recharge and understanding the technical aspects of the diversion area where they divert flow from the Santa Clara River to bring water to their recharge areas. And it was really great to meet board members and staff from the other agencies and from United Water Conservation District. And everybody should go to Lake Piru because it is absolutely gorgeous right now. I think they're trying to open for this weekend, Easter weekend, and be ready for some boating out there. And it was just absolutely gorgeous. So it's worth the drive. So go take a look. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice President Ozahowski.
Right. On March 23rd, I attended the AQUAS 2023 Legislative Symposium in Sacramento. The symposium consisted of two panels, one infrastructure panel and water rights panel. One of the major talking points was the importance of SB 23. And as you know, it's going to potentially improve the regulatory permitting process so that we can build things much faster. I had a chance to speak with APCA President Pam Tobin and thank her for a very public recognition of former Vice President Jerry Gladbach for his service to California on water issues. According to senior advisor to one of the Senate leaders, Senator Tony Atkins, flooding and flood mitigation is on everyone's radar in Sacramento. Therefore, we could see movement in Sacramento regarding reservoirs used for flood control and water capture. I exchanged pleasantries with Senator John, I'm mispronouncing his last name, Laird. Senator was the final speaker at the symposium. Fun thing, he grew up in Vallejo, and I worked in Vallejo in the shipyard, so we had one thing in common. Senator Laird is a vocal member on the Natural Resources and Water Committee, and as well as a member of the Budget and Fiscal Review Committee, and I'm happy to report that he shares the same goals of ACWA and ACWA members agencies. I spoke with Pablo Garza, the chief consultant for the Assembly Committee on Water Parks and Wildlife. Happy to report that he was impressed with our newly elected Assemblywoman Pilar Chavio, who serves on that committee. And I also spoke with Nicholas Blair, ACWA's regulatory advocate, who's working on securing exemptions on use of large utility vehicles powered by fossil fuels from upcoming CARB's proposed advanced clean fleets regulation. I'm afraid it's not looking good, but you know, the CARB's language is available and officially online, and comment sections are due by April 7th. As Director Kupa mentioned, ACWA is working on a letter, and I believe they have already submitted one. And I will share with Board Secretary the link to CARB's language so she can send it out to all the directors so you guys can take a look at it. That's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Vice President Ozahowski. Any other AB 1234? Director Cooper.
On March 22nd, I attended the ACWA Region 8 board meeting. We're putting together the program for June, identifying speakers, hopefully that we'll get in June. The program will focus a good part around, originally it was going to be around drought, and now that's changed focus a little, we're going to talk about the Colorado River and what the future for the Colorado River looks like. Have some good speakers coming up. March 30th and the 31st, I attended the ACWA board meeting in Sacramento. And then on April 1st, I attended or had my Zoom meeting with Aaron Hasty. Just a couple of quick things with ACWA. ACWA is looking at putting together, or the right folks are looking at putting together a water bond for the 2024 election. They've done some polling. The polling numbers look good. They're looking at a bond somewhere between 7.8 and $15 billion. Hopefully they can get it through. I do have some brochures for it here. I don't have enough for everybody, but I'll get them to April and she can get it sent out kind of on what they're looking for in the way of water at this point. One issue that's very big with ACWA and with water agencies around the state right now is this change in water rights legislation that's coming out. There's four bills that are in to give the state board more control of people's water rights. Farmers, people up north are very unhappy with it. ACWA's working hard to get these things stopped. AB 460, AB 676, AB 1337, and Senate Bill 389. All of those four bills. And we ought to probably get on the bandwagon along with them because it's going to go farther and farther than just the farmers up in Northern California right now. The ACWA Foundation that's been put together to help promote DEI in the water industry has moved forward. They've received some pretty good funding from a couple of private agencies, engineering firms, and we've worked out an agreement with them in how ACWA will get reimbursed for the time spent in supporting the foundation. We want it to be completely separate from ACWA, and it has its own board now. It's not ACWA people. It's people just from all over, and it'll be but the time Aqua puts into it will be reimbursed. We gave them some money to start it out, but then after that, it has to stand on its own. So with that, that's all I've got.
Director Cooper, was the meeting, the Aqua Region 8 meeting, was that virtual or in Sacramento?
Yes.
Virtual. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Cooper. I don't see any other hands up, so I'll give you my brief reports, Madam Secretary. On March 30th, I had my Zoom call with Aaron Hasty to follow up on the team building, a session we had. On April 1st, I attended the final Water Academy plant tour and graduation. I certainly echo General Manager Stone's comments about thanking staff, the marvelous job that they all did. I think it was an overwhelming success, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next year. I hope we'll be able to do it. On April 3rd, yesterday, I had my one-on-one meeting with General Manager Stone. It's amazing how easy it is to fill an hour talking to our general manager about issues that are coming our way in the near future. So that concludes my AB 1234. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on the AB 1234s?
We do not.
Very good. Then I believe that completes item 11, AB 1234 reports. We can move on to item 12, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight? Director Armitage.
Thank you. So I had the honor of participating in reviewing and scoring the 6 scholarship applications for the first ever Jerry Gladbach scholarship that is going to be given through Aqua. And although I can't reveal who is selected, you'll have to wait for the announcement at the Aqua conference. I will say that it was really, really inspiring to read about what motivated the applicants to want to work in the water industry and on water-related issues, and explain how they want to be part of the solutions to the challenges that we're facing. So I'm really grateful that I had that opportunity to do that. I guess you'll get to see who the winner is at the conference. And second and lastly, I just want to acknowledge a fellow community member who is a student and a local Boy Scout who just completed his Eagle Scout project related to water. Andrew from Troop 583 in Castaic decided to install a water bottle filling station at Camp Valley Trails, or Valley Trails Camp, where hundreds of our kids here in Santa Clarita Valley go to summer camp each year. So his project makes it easier for the campers to fill their hopefully reusable water bottles and help save us from having to use so many single-use plastics. So thank you to Andrew. And I think this is just another example of how our youth are interested in caring for our water resources and our other resources as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other director reports?
Mr. President, if you would indulge me, I need to reopen the GM report for one item. When you said the words Aqua Conference, and you'll have to wait and see, the brain cells that stored that information suddenly came to life. I don't know how I missed this, but we were nominated to receive the Clara Hill Award this year for our Valley Center PFAS project. And our staff is aware of that, but I had forgotten to let the board know about that. So another reason when you're at Aqua to not miss the lunch.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, and I just didn't want to go off agenda, but thanks for going backwards. All right. We are now at, item 13, a director request for approval for event attendance. Are there any requests for event attendance? I think we've all had a pretty full plate, but Director Vice President Ozahusky.
Think of the mic.
Oh. All right. Are there any other event attendance requests? Seeing none, we can move on to item 14, adjournment. And before we adjourn, I'd like to remind directors who sit on the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority Board that there'll be a meeting right after. I'll leave it to the board president to decide whether we need to have a recess before we, or we're going to roll right into that. We are adjourned from this meeting.